The issues of ksuba and what are the responsibilities that a husband and a wife have when they sign a ksuba. Rashi in our parsha writes some kind of reference to a ksuba that was written already in the days of the Chumash, but the Gemara actually has a discussion about what the nature of the obligation of ksuba actually is. Is the obligation of a ksuba something that finds itself having roots in Chumash? Is it a chiyuv midaraisa, or is it something that was instituted rabbinically later on, and the Chumash itself does not obligate a husband in the Ksuba as we know it? So the Gemara Maseches Ksubas on Daf Yud discusses the issue and says the following: Amar of Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Reb Shimon ben Elazar. Chachamim tiknu lahem libenos Yisrael. The Chachamim had this idea to institute that a woman who gets married should get, if she's a besula, if she's a virgin, she gets masayim, she gets 200 golden pieces or silver pieces, whatever that is, ula almana, mana. And if she's a woman who was already married before, she's a widow, and now she's getting married once again, she's entitled to 100 coins. Vehem haminuhu. Because the Chachamim imposed this obligation on a husband, that he has to pay his wife either 200 or 100, therefore they also said, Shim Amar Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, if a husband comes later on, the day after the wedding, and he says, I thought I was marrying a woman who didn't have any problems, and it turns out that she has major issues that I wasn't expecting at all, Neman, he is believed. Why should we believe the husband? Isn't he an Eid Echad? Why would an Eid Echad be believed? So the answer, says the Gemara, is since we impose upon him all of these obligations to pay his wife, therefore we say that he's also going to have the privilege of being believed on his own if he has a claim against his wife. That's the exchange that the Gemara makes. Ask the Gemara, does that make sense? If the whole reason why the Chachamim want a husband to obligate himself to his wife is that he should feel some sort of responsibility toward her, well then why do you give him the right to come to Beis Din the next day and have a claim against his wife? That's not being very fair to the woman. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rava, Chazaka, Ein Adam Tareach B'Suda U'Mafsida. If a person invested so much time getting ready for the wedding and so much money making sure to have this beautiful celebration, he's not just going to show up the next day and make up some bogus claim that isn't really honest, that isn't really true. And therefore the Gemara says, you don't have a reason to be concerned. If the husband comes with a claim the next day, you can assume that he's telling the truth. But we also make the husband feel a responsibility toward his wife, and therefore we tell him that he has an obligation to pay her either $100 or $200 based on the Gemara's calculation. He has to pay her if he should divorce her without a real reason. Then the Gemara goes on and says, what are you talking about? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel stood up and he said, Ksubas Isha Min HaTorah. This is not a Takanas Chachamim. This is not something that the rabbis instituted. This is something that the Torah imposes. The Torah expects every husband to support his wife and to take care of all of her needs. And that is what the ksuba is all about. This is not something that came later. And therefore he says, why would these two things be dependent on one another? Just because we impose an obligation biblically that a husband has to go and support his wife does not give him the right to show up to Beis Din the next day and say whatever he wants. Those two things are not contingent on one another at all. So the Gemara has this debate, and the Rishonim are not sure what exactly the outcome of the Gemara is. Tosus there first says maybe ksuba is only derabanan. Then Tosus says, if anyone ever paid attention when you read a ksuba at a wedding, one of the texts in the ksuba that we say is dechazi lichi mida araisa, which means that you are entitled to on a biblical level. Says Tosus, doesn't that mean that obviously the ksuba is a biblical obligation? Otherwise, what are we saying? That you have an entitlement to this money, midaraisa. It's not true. Midrabanan, they made me give the money as a husband. The Torah never said. Tosa says it must be, from the fact that we include that line in the ksuba, it must be that the obligation of a ksuba is midaraisa. The Rush, there on the Gemara, says he doesn't think that that is an indication at all. The Rush says he thinks ksuba is only a rabbinic obligation, and it is not something that the Torah imposed on a person when getting married to his wife. However, the Rush is dealing with the problem as well. What does it mean when we say the chazi lichi mida araisa, that you are entitled to on a biblical level? How do you translate that? Says the Rush, it doesn't mean that the Torah obligated you to give it. Rather, it means something totally different. The Rush writes, we have two different calculations. When you say that I have to pay $100, do you mean $100 based on today's currency, the minag hamedina, the dollar bills that we use today, or the shkalim that they use in Israel? Or do you mean I have to pay $100 based on Torah standards of what $100 is, whatever it was back in the days then, which might turn out to be a lot more than it is today? Says the Rush, that's what we mean. When a husband obligates himself to pay all of these things to his wife, the expectation is not that he's going to pay $100 of what our community considers $100 value to be, but he obligates himself to pay $100 of what $100 was back then, which is far more than just $100. Aksuba today is an exorbitant amount of money that the husband is expected to pay, but says the Rush, that's what we mean. Take for another example. When we say that you have to give money for Pidyon HaBen, so the Gemara in Kiddushin wants to know, you have to give Chamesh Shloim, you have to give a certain amount of coins. Does that mean I could take five nickels today? Those are coins today. I could take five quarters, and that would be good enough? Obviously not. Why isn't that enough? Because since the Torah expects me to pay the money of Pidyon HaBen, I have to follow the Chamesh Shloim currency from the time that the Torah was given. And that's far more than 5 pennies or 5 nickels or 5 dimes that we have today. You have to give whatever what the value was back then when the Torah obligated me to do it. And that is the same, says the Rush, when we come to our nature of the obligation of Aksuba today. That you have to pay not $100 that we expect $100 to be today, but you have to pay back the Chazi Lichi Midaraisa, whatever the Torah currency was worth. That's what we have an obligation to do today. So the Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the name of the Ramban that he was once at a wedding with the Ramban. The Ramban was the Masada Kedushin. And the Ramban started writing out the Ksuba and he said, hey, there's a mistake here. Why does it say the Chazi Lichi Midaraisa? It shouldn't have that in the Ksuba. We all know that the Ksuba is not Daraisa. We don't paskin that way. And the Ramban said, take it out. Leave it out of the Ksuba. That doesn't make sense. So Rabbeinu Yonah says he was taken aback. He was watching the Rebbe, the Ramban, do this. He didn't say anything. But he said that it seems that the Ramban was under the impression that the Ksuba is only Midrabanan, and therefore he took it out. La halacha, we add in that phrase regardless, and what we mean by the phrase is that even if the Ksuba obligation is only Midrabanan, we still have to pay the amount of money, the equivalent of what it was back in the times of the Chumash. Now, that's a very, very, very complicated calculation. It's not simple at all. My father has a long piece on it. Many contemporary Gedolim try to figure out exactly what that amount is, and it's very relevant because when you have a couple that gets divorced, you have to actually know what that expectation was and what the obligation actually is. It's important, by the way, that when a chassan and kala get married, they understand what it is that they're agreeing to. I always find it humorous when you go to a chassan and by the chassan's tish, they're reading the Tnaim, or by the chassan's tish, they're showing him the ksuba, and the chassan is intently shuckling, or under the chuppah, he's shuckling while they're reading the ksuba, and you're wondering, what's he shuckling about? Does he think they're saying a bracha? Does he think there's something here? What he's listening to is the obligation that he just took upon himself. He might not be shuckling if he understands what it is that he signed up to. And the problem is, if he doesn't understand what he signed up to, what kind of document is that? What kind of agreement is that? This is a major problem. A husband has to know when he gets married, there are about 9 or 10 obligations that he takes upon himself to take care of his wife in certain ways. And there are 4 privileges that he's given by the nature of getting married from his wife as well. Those 10 obligations are the following. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch seems pretty clear that you have to tell the chassan exactly what he's signing up to. How do we know that? Because the Shulchan Aruch writes, what if at the time of divorce, the chassan says, are you kidding me? This is what I signed up to? I didn't know that it cost that much money. I didn't know that the ksuba really meant that I had to pay all this. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Eino Naman, a man who stands up at the time of a get and says, I don't expect to pay all this money because I never signed up to it. I never understood what it was. He's not believed. It seems from the Shulchan Aruch that we have an obligation, whoever the Masada Kedushin is, or the parents, whoever's involved in the wedding, has an obligation to tell the chassan, by the way, this is what you're obligating yourself to. This is what you're signing on the dotted line to. And if you don't like it, don't get married. But if you want to get married, this is what you have to agree to. So number one, the Gemara says, a husband has an obligation to sustain his wife and pay for her mizonos. He has to pay for her daily expenses of eating. And that's a basic obligation of a spouse, that's what he has to do. Number two, says the Gemara, ksusa. He has to pay for her clothing, which includes, the Shulchan Aruch writes, it includes not only her clothing, but the beds in the house, all the general day-to-day needs that are necessary for a woman to live in a home, that is what he has to pay for. Number three, says the Gemara, is ona. He has to have time to give his wife intimacy as well. My grandfather always used to tell us that when he was in cheder in Europe, so when they translated the pasuk, she'er ksus va'ona, that a husband has an obligation for she'er ksus va'ona, he said, the Rebbe in cheder didn't know, how is he going to translate ona? How can he tell the kids about intimacy? They don't know how to understand that. So he said, ona means tzait. He said, you have to give your wife time. That's what the obligation of ona is. And my grandfather said he got a little older and he realized, hey, that's not really what the pasuk means. He read the Gemara, he learned the sugyas. The Gemara really means ona is, he has an obligation to be intimate with his wife. Then he said he got a little older and he realized, no, that is the right shot. Ona means a husband has an obligation not just to be intimate with his wife, but he has an obligation to give time to his wife. That's the pashup shot. Sherek Sisva Ona means he has to take care of his wife monetarily, and he has to give her time. That's an obligation, a basic obligation.
Ona with an ayin?
Ona with an ayin, yeah. So the Gemara then says that there was an imposed amount of money, a fixed amount of money called the Iker Ksuba that a husband has to pay his wife, a Tosefta Ksuba that was added along as well, Rifu Asa, he has to pay for her medical expenses, he has to pay if she ever gets captured, and she needs to be, she needs a ransom, Kvurasa, a husband has an obligation to pay for his wife's burial, a husband has all kinds of obligation that he has to pay for. In exchange, says the Gemara, a wife also has to give her Maisei Adayim, she has to give her salary, if she has a job, she has to give her salary to the husband. The Gemara says, Mitzi Asa, should she ever find, if she wins the lottery or something like that, she has an obligation to share that with her husband. And all of her investments also go to the husband as well. That is what the Gemara says. What if a woman has a job, she's a high-powered lawyer, and she's making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and the husband is just paying for her food? So that's not a fair trade-off. Says the Gemara, in such a case, a wife has a right to say, you keep your chocolate cake to yourself, you keep your orange juice to yourself, and I'll keep my salary to myself, and you fend for yourself. Says the Gemara, in some cases you have a right to say, since this was given in exchange for that, therefore you have a right, the woman has a right to say, I am mochel on the exchange, and I'd rather keep my half, and you figure out what to do with your part as well. The Gemara does say in Maseches Ksubas Daf Nun Aleph that we have an idea that's referred to as Tanai Bezdin. Usually when I make some kind of agreement with a person, both parties that sign on the dotted lines have to be in agreement to what it is that they're agreeing to what it is that they're signing off on. So let's say we go into a business deal. I can't just say, oh, I expected you to do this and that. If it's not in the contract, you can't expect it of me. The same should go over here. If a husband doesn't agree, let's say a couple gets married and a husband under the chuppah doesn't agree to certain things, the Gemara says clearly, even if he doesn't sign on the dotted lines, he's obligated to do it anyway. Why? Because this is referred to as a Tanai Bezdin. The Chachamim impose this obligation on every husband. Whether he signs on the dotted line or he doesn't, he has an obligation to provide all of these services to his wife. And if he doesn't, he has no excuse to say later, well, I didn't want to be involved and I never agreed to it at all in the first place. The Rashba writes a similar understanding when it comes to business as well. The Rashba says, let's say we live in a certain community, and everybody who's involved in this kind of business, this kind of area of work, has certain understandings. Says the Rashba, if you come into a practice, you come into a business, and you say, well, I didn't sign up to that, I didn't know that that's what I was signing up to, says the Rashba, too bad. Why too bad? Because if that is the Minhag HaMedina, if that's what's the accepted practice, and it's considered to be a reasonable Medina, it's not a place where they have corrupt laws, but if that is the general understanding of businessmen, says the Rashba, you have an obligation to pay for that, even if you didn't sign up to it, even if you never dreamt of signing up to it. And says the Rashba, he adds, even if it's against the halacha, even if the Shulchan Aruch says that you don't have an obligation to pay in this kind of circumstance, the Rashba says, minig oker halacha in such a case, it doesn't matter. When we're talking about minig hasochim, when we're talking about people who are doing business with one another, it's dependent on the community, and it's not dependent so much on what the halacha expects that to be. And based on this, if you assume that a ksuba is considered to be a tnai bezdin, that a ksuba is something that the bezdin imposes upon you regardless of your agreement, why is it that we come to a wedding and we have to make a kinyan? Why do we have to tell the chassan, pick up a yarmulke, pick up a pen? Why does he have to make a kinyan? If even without his agreement, it happens anyway, what's the point of doing that? That's a major question that bothered some of the achronim. So one approach perhaps is that the Rambam writes, even though there are times when a kinyan might not be necessary in life, the Rambam says, we still want to make sure that it's gamar belibo. We want to make sure that a person understands the severity of what it is that they're signing up to. If you're just going to tell a chassan, well, you're getting married and there are obligations, and therefore whether you like it or not, that's what you're obligated to do, he's not really going to understand. When it comes time for the get, he's going to start making trouble. But if a chassan makes a kinyan and he actually does something actively to show that he's engaged in this process, then the Rambam says that is a way that a person can never turn around and say, oh, I didn't know, I didn't understand, I didn't really want to. Once he makes a kinyan, that is the way to show that he's very serious about it. This is also the reason why by Mechiras Chametz, when you make the rabbi as your proxy to sell the chametz for you, so why is it that you have to make a kinyan with the rabbi? What's the reason for that? The Rambam writes clearly that a person has the ability to give over his power of attorney to somebody else without making any kinyanim. You can just say, with your mouth that you want to give it over. So why is it that we make a kinyan when we go to sell the chametz? The answer is, again, because we want that a person should understand the mechira that you're doing is actually serious, and it's a binding agreement. And when you're going to sell it to the nachri, that is something that is a real sale, and it's not something you have a right to back out on. And the only way to do that is by concretizing it in a kinyan, says the Rambam. That's the way to do it, to show that a person is very serious about whatever it is that they are engaged in. The second reason why we do it, and with this we'll close for Mincha, the second reason why we do a kinyan is simply because sometimes you have a kinyan, a ksuba that's signed during the day, and the chuppah is not going to be till at night. Very easy for it to happen during different times of the year when you have shkia at a very inopportune time during the wedding. So in such a case, we want to make sure we have this concept of a shtar muktam. You can't have a shtar that was written earlier than it's supposed to be. That's going to make someone lose out later on. So therefore, if you make the kinyan at the time when it's during the day, and you sign the ksuba then, that means he obligated himself from that earlier period of time. Doesn't matter that the chuppah is going to be later. Even if the chuppah is on another day, if they made the kinyan then, what you're signing to on the ksubah is that that's when he obligated himself, which has nothing to do with when the actual chuppah happened. So sometimes the kinyan can actually be helpful to save you from a problem of a mistake in a ksubah that may have been dated earlier, because that's when the kinyan was actually done.